അഭയശരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവിരാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം നിത്യ പ്രവിഷ്ടോം വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശ്രീ ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്ത വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപ ഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ട് ഗിരിഗോവർദ്ധാനിക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാംക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാംക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാംക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാംക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാംക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൗർ പ്രേമനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിസ് ടു ദി അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിസ് ടു ദി അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിസ് ടു ദി അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരു ആൻഡ് ശ്രീ ഗൗരൻ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിസ് ടു ശ്രീ പ്രഭുപാദ വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തവിദാന്ത സ്വാമിനി ഗുരുവാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വദേവം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണി ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതി വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതി വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതി വാസുദേവായ സ്വദീയ ഓം അജ്ഞാനതിമിരാന്ധസ്യ ജ്ഞാനാഞ്ജനശലാകയാ ചക്ഷുരുന്മീലിതാം യേന തസ്മൈ ശ്രീഗുരവേ നമഃ ശ്രീചൈതന്യമനോഭീഷ്ടം സ്ഥാപിതാം യേന ഭൂതലേ സ്വയം രൂപകദാ മഹ്യം ദദാതിം സുഭദാന്തികം വന്ദേഹം ശ്രീഗുരു ശ്രീയുതാപദകമലം ശ്രീഗുരും വൈഷ്ണവാംശ്ച ശ്രീരൂപം സാഗ്രജാതം സഹജനരഘുനാഥാന്വിതം തം സജീവം സാദ്വൈതം സാവധൂതം പരിജനാസഹിതം കൃഷ്ണചൈതന്യദേവം ശ്രീരാധാകൃഷ്ണപദം സഹഗണലളിതാം ശ്രീവിശാഖാന്വിതാംശ്ച ഹേ കൃഷ്ണകരുണാസിന്ധോ ദീനബന്ധോ ജഗൽപദേ ഗോപേശ ഗോപികാകാന്ത രാധാകാന്ത നമോസ്തുതേ തപ്തകാഞ്ചന ഗൗരാംഗി രാധേ വൃന്ദാവനേശ്വരി വൃഷഭാനുസുതേ ദേവി പ്രണമാമി ഹരിപ്രിയേ വാഞ്ചകൽപതരുഭ്യശ്ച കൃപാസിന്ധുഭ്യ ഏവ ച പതിതാനാം പാവനേഭ്യോ വൈഷ്ണവേഭ്യോ നമോ നമഃ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭോ നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതം പുരാണമുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണിം ഭഗവതിം അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനിം അംബ ത്വാ അനുസന്ധദാമി ഭഗവത്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണിം നമോസ്തുതേ വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധേ ഫുല്ലാരവിന്ദായത പത്മനേത്രം യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈരപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപാം പ്രപന്ന പാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേത്രൈകപാണൈ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമാം സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സസുധീർഭോക്ത ദുഃഖം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹൽ വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസചാണൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗൽഗുരും മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽ കൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യ ബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്ര രുദ്രമരുതസ്ത്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈസ്തവൈ വേദൈ സംഗമദൈ ക്രമോപനിഷദൈർ ഗായന്തിയം സമഗാഹ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസ പശ്യന്തിയം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാസുരഗണ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ. ഓം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമഃ. ശ്രീമതിയായ നമഃ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം. ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. സോ ടുഡേ വി വോണ്ട് ടു ടോക്ക് ഫ്രം ഭഗവത്ഗീത ഫോർ എ പീരീഡ് ഓഫ് അബൌട്ട് 24 weeks roughly. Are trying to cover one chapter every Saturday. The purpose of this Bhagavad Gita classes is basically to, I know every, all of you have read Bhagavad Gita either at least once, if not twice, thrice or many more times, because this is one literature, Vedic literature, which has fascinated people all through their lifetime. Any time when they take Bhagavad Gita, they find something always very fascinating with Bhagavad Gita. That's the mystery of Bhagavad Gita. And it has been acknowledged by everyone in the world who have read Bhagavad Gita, there is something mystery about Bhagavad Gita. We all know about that. So similarly, all devotees also, when they read Bhagavad Gita, they get this fascinating experience of this transcendental knowledge which Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. But our purpose is to understand Bhagavad Gita from the viewpoint, because whatever Krishna has spoken to Arjuna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, because of the limited time Krishna had in the battlefield, before his departure from this world to the spiritual abode, Krishna spoke again the same thing much more in detail in the Ekadasha Skandam or the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam to Uddhava. So, keeping Arjuna in forefront, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, and keeping Uddhava in the forefront, Krishna spoke the 11th canto, Ekadasha Skandam. So, in order to to prepare ourselves to understand the Ekadasha Skandam is a very, very, very deep subject. In order to understand, people are mystified by the knowledge in the Ekadasha, that many, many great, great personalities who have spent their whole lifetime to understand the philosophy of Ekadasha Skandam have found it very, very hard, even after spending the whole lifetime to study Ekadasha. That is the mystery of Ekadasha Skandam. So that Ekadasha Skandam preparation is from Bhagavad Gita. Because if you look in the 9th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find there, at the very end of 9th canto, prior to the last words, what Sukadeva Goswami spoke. Because Sukadeva Goswami wanted to finish Srimad Bhagavatam at the end of 9th canto. You can see that very clearly there. We discussed that when we were talking about 9th canto. In the last chapter of the 9th canto, Sukadeva Goswami tried to complete the appearance of Krishna and Krishna's pastimes, everything in a few verses, and he wanted to close Srimad Bhagavatam there. At that point, Parikshit Maharaj started asking detailed questions. So, only after that, Sudeva Goswami started in expanding the 10th canto. In detail, he spoke later. But prior to that, when he finishes the 9th canto, summarizing Krishna's pastimes in this world, Sudeva Goswami used a word there, Prochodhavaya cha param samagal sodhamam. Prochodhavaya cha param samagal sodhamam. Krishna prepared himself to go back to the spiritual world, and before going back to the spiritual world, Krishna thought, is there anything more I have to do in this world to help anyone who wants to come back to the spiritual world later? So it is with that background, he spoke there to Uddhava. What did he say? Prochodhavaya cha param samagal swadhamam. That he spoke the knowledge, the highest knowledge, param, highest transcendental knowledge, that is what's spoken in the Ekadasham. So, Prochodhavaya cha param samagal swadhamam. After that, Krishna decided to go back to the spiritual world. So the importance of Ekadasham is already mentioned in the ninth canto. Similarly, you will also find in the third canto when Vidura and Uddhava met with each other in Vrindavanam, there was a discussion about that. And there also there is reference to the 11th canto, which Uddhava has carried with him all the way to Badrinath when Krishna was departing from this world for the benefit of the society, human society, which will follow after Krishna's departure from this world. So, what important thing is that this Bhagavad Gita is the basis on which all the Vedic literature has been built. Or in other words, all the Vedic literature has a close relationship with Bhagavad Gita. But prior to going to all that, first of all, one or two things we have to mention here, and that I should mention openly also. First thing is that without Krishna's permission, it is not possible to hear Srimad Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna is the controlling personality behind it. When Krishna wants that Bhagavad Gita should be spoken, and when Krishna wants that Bhagavad Gita should be listened by devotees, then an opportunity automatically comes. Several times before, we wanted to do this, but somehow or the other it didn't happen. So it is now that Krishna has given us the permission to speak from Bhagavad Gita, because Bhagavad Gita is not an ordinary literature. It is the highest transcendental knowledge. And so in order to speak from Bhagavad Gita, unless Krishna has shown us some mercy, it is not possible to speak from Bhagavad Gita. So we have to pray to Krishna that he gives us that little understanding. Without Krishna's mercy, to understand Bhagavad Gita is very, very difficult. Many, many great personalities, they have touched Bhagavad Gita and tried to understand Bhagavad Gita, and all of them are always agreed on one point, that it is impossible to understand the Bhagavad Gita's message completely. It is difficult to know that. That is the way Bhagavad Gita is structured. And there are reasons for that being like that also. It is not that Krishna wanted to keep it away from us. It is due to our own shortcomings that we are not able to understand Bhagavad Gita. So that is one thing. And secondly, that Krishna has spoken to Arjuna Bhagavad Gita in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And fortunately, Arjuna was able to understand. And this Bhagavad Gita, after hearing from Krishna, Arjuna took action and he knew what he had to do. In other words, Arjuna has got the right message from Krishna, how he has to act. Much later, after the Mahabharata war was over, in one instance, Arjuna asked Krishna if he could speak to him Bhagavad Gita once again. And at that time, Krishna says to Arjuna, "No, I cannot speak to you Bhagavad Gita now." Because Mahabharata war and the battlefield has actually given the opportunity for Krishna at that time, and he said that motivated him to speak in that way, the transcendental knowledge to Arjuna. And therefore it was never spoken again to Arjuna. So like this, one or two instances you will find in the Mahabharatam and later on also in other Harivamsham and all that, reference to Bhagavad Gita in different ways. So whatever that is, the important thing to remember is that we cannot understand Bhagavad Gita without Krishna's mercy. This is the most important thing. That is why with all our heart, we have to pray to Krishna that somehow or the other, please give us some understanding of this great literature, what you have spoken to Arjuna, and later on for thousands of years, which was followed by the great acharyas and great devotees all the time. And the position of Bhagavad Gita also is discussed later in the other Vedic literature, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. So, prior to that, so few things like about Bhagavad Gita one should always remember. So, in order to understand Bhagavad Gita, the first qualification is that is to become a devotee of Krishna. If you are not a devotee, if one does not accept Krishna's authority as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one will never understand the mystery of Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, generally, it is always said that Bhagavad Gita is only understood by the devotees. That is the qualification to understand Bhagavad Gita. If one approaches Bhagavad Gita with a mood challenging Krishna's knowledge, Krishna's authority, then he can keep challenging whole lifetime. you would not get very far because of the transcendental nature of the knowledge discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. Whereas on the other hand, as soon as one accepts Krishna's authority and Krishna's position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, automatically many, many things gets revealed unto him by Krishna's mercy. And that is how the position of all the great authorities on the Bhagavad Gita have pursued that path throughout their throughout their activities in their lifetimes. Whether it was Shankaracharya or Ramanujacharya, Vishnu Swami, Nimbarkacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, every great acharya, authorities on the Vedic tradition, they have pursued this path of understanding Bhagavad Gita by Krishna's mercy alone. So that is another important thing to remember, that by Krishna's mercy we understand Bhagavad Gita, and by surrendering and accepting Krishna's authority as the Supreme Personality, we will have a little understanding of Bhagavad Gita. So this Bhagavad Gita, which was spoken by Krishna 5,000 years ago, actually it happened in the Dwapara Yugam, not in the Kali Yugam. It was in Dwapara Yugam this battle of Kurukshetra happened. It was Kali Yugam began the day when Krishna departed from this world. So in other words, it was in this previous Yugam, in Dwapara Yugam, that this Bhagavad Gita was spoken. So Vedavyasa Maharshi put Bhagavad Gita in the Mahabharatam, in the middle of Mahabharatam. And because it came in through Mahabharatam, it was called as Bhagavad Gita. Actually, it has much longer name than that. Bhagavad Gita is only what is popularly known as Bhagavad Gita. Actually, the name of the book, if when somebody says Bhagavad Gita, Gita means a song sung by Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. Bhagavan has sung this song, so it is Bhagavad Gita. But then the question is, song about what? What is it about? And therefore, it says there that actually the complete name of the book is Bhagavad Gita Upanishad. It is an Upanishad. Upanishad, it is in the category of Upanishads, it is mentioned as the one of the most important Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita Upanishad. That is the actual name of Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita Upanishad. But then why was it called Bhagavad Gita? That is also the reason behind it. Generally, all Upanishads comes as in the part of the Upanishads part of the Vedas. Unlike the Upanishad part of the Vedas, Bhagavad Gita has come in an itihasam called Mahabharatam. And because that is the reason why it was called Bhagavad Gita, not as Gita Upanishad. But strictly speaking, it is Gita Upanishad. The knowledge in Bhagavad Gita, knowledge in the Upanishads are the same. So therefore, it is actually referred to as Gita Upanishad, but popularly known as Bhagavad Gita, because it has appeared in the Mahabharatam, not in the Vedas. That is one important thing to remember. Secondly, the knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita has many side important aspects as well, other aspects as well. The topic that is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita is yoga, or approaching Krishna, how to go back to Krishna, or linking with the Absolute Truth. In various aspects it is discussed. Karma Yogam, Jnana Yogam, Bhakti Yogam, Raja Yogam. So many different yoga systems are discussed. How the living entity, relationship with the Jiva and the Super Souls, Krishna, that how to establish that relationship. That is what is discussed. Therefore, it is also called as Yoga Shastram, the science of yoga systems. It's also called as Yoga Shastram. In addition to that, for the jnanis, or the people who cultivate the process of knowledge, for them, Bhagavad Gita is called the book of the science of the spiritual knowledge. In other words, it is popularly referred to as Brahma Vidya. So they call it as Brahma Vidya. Yogis call it as Yoga Shastram. So Vedavyasa Maharshi has not exempted anyone in that. In other words, when you find at the end of each chapter, in the original Bhagavad Gita, we will find at the end of each chapter that Bhagavad Gita, Upanishad, Yoga Shastre, Brahma Vidyayam, Sri Krishna Arjuna Samvade, Arjuna Ushada Yoga, Nama, Pradhama Udhyaya. That is how they complete each chapter, referring to the title of the chapter and the topic of the chapter, what is discussed. But everywhere you will find Upanishalsu, Brahma Vidyayam, Yoga Shastra. It is Upanishad, it's a Brahma Vidya, it is Yoga Shastra. Everything is combined in the Bhagavad Gita. So that is how each chapter ends. And in addition, along with that, you can see that Vedam Vyasa Maharshi has no difficulty in accepting that all these subjects are discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. Yoga Shastram, Brahma Vidya, transcendental knowledge, everything is there in the Bhagavad Gita. So, coming to this Bhagavad Gita, the topic, all of you have, as I said, I'm sure all of you have read Bhagavad Gita at one time or the other. I don't know. Some of you have read many, many times. Because of the this Bhagavad Gita has inspired from time immemorial all those people who have come to spiritual path, spiritual life, because of the type of knowledge that is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. If somebody asks you what is the most important, what is the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita, we discussed in the, Prabhupada also discusses in the Bhagavad Gita earlier, that the ultimate conclusion of Bhagavad Gita is to surrender to Krishna, isn't it? This is the conclusion. We always say, Sarvadharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam raja aham tvam sarvabhebhyo mokshayishyami mashucham. This is the verse in the 18th chapter, verse number I think 66. That verse is such popular that because that is the concluding chapter and more or less the final verses, and there Krishna is saying to Arjuna that the goal of all these things is to surrender unto me. That's what Krishna says. Krishna says to Arjuna, just surrender unto me and I'll protect you, don't fear. He says, don't cry, don't fear. And I'll protect you, and that is the culmination of all this spiritual knowledge. Culmination of all the spiritual knowledge. That means the whole of Bhagavad Gita you have discussed, and at the end Krishna is saying to Arjuna, just to surrender unto me. Isn't it? Sarva dharman, give up all the other religious principles, Krishna says. Mamegam sharanam braja, that consider me alone as the shelter. I'm the only shelter, and surrender unto me. Aham tvam sarva bhavebhyo, I will protect you from all sinful reactions. Mokshayishyami ma shuchaha, then I'll also offer you liberation at the end. Don't cry, he says. So when Krishna says to Arjuna, don't cry, that means there is something else to it, isn't it? That when someone says to you, don't cry, what does that mean? Krishna doesn't like Arjuna crying. That is why he says that don't cry, isn't it? You say to somebody, don't cry. Why? Because you don't like him crying. You just feel that somebody is crying. So Krishna is saying to Arjuna, don't cry, that moksha yishyami ma shucham, I offer you liberation. As soon as you read this verse in the Bhagavad Gita, you start wondering, why is that, if it is such a simple process of surrendering to Krishna, why all these different yogas are discussed in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Karma Yogam is discussed in 3-4 chapters, Raja Yogam is discussed there, Ashtanga Yogam is there, then many chapters Jnana Yogam is there, and many chapters Bhakti Yogam is also there. So all these different processes of sadhana or different yoga systems are discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. Why? Why is that? That if it is just surrendering to Krishna, straightforward, and how come that all these yoga systems were discussed prior to that? That question will automatically come to one's mind. You cannot avoid that. Now, the answer to that is this, that the process of surrendering to Krishna is not an easy thing. Although it appears, looks very simple, but just by the fact that when you read the verse, it looks very simple. Just surrender unto me, Krishna says. But we all know that the process of surrendering is not so simple. It is not possible to surrender to Krishna so easily. It is not possible to surrender to Krishna so easily. We know that. Those who have thought about these things in depth, and those who have studied Bhagavad Gita seriously, they'll know why it is not possible to surrender to Krishna. There are many factors that stops us from surrendering to Krishna. It is there, that you can't take it away. And one of the most important thing is that what is known as prarabdha karma. Prarabdha karma means the karma that has brought this body into this world for you. You have come to this world with that karma carrying on your back. This is this karma that is what is driving you in this life, in this particular body. That is known as prarabdham. And this prarabdham starts at the moment you have appeared in this world, and the moment till you leave this body in this world, that prarabdham is driving you from one point to another. And this prarabdham, everyone knows that is behind him. those who have understood the philosophy of karma and karma mimams, they'll know that the effect of karma in one's life is such a powerful thing that this karma controls us from very beginning to end. Sometimes you can also see yourself that in your own life things have happened. Sometimes you are helpless about it. Things have happened without your wanting that to happen. Something was forced upon you by some unknown power in this world. Although sometimes it is mystifying, but the fact is that there is a powerful element of prarabdha karma behind it. So this prarabdha karma is one factor that will not allow you to surrender to Krishna easily. And that prarabdham will manifest in different ways in the world. For example, prarabdham will come in the form of family relationships, relationship with the body, attachment to the body, and so many other commitments in this world. This is all classified under this group called prarabdham. So for example, sometimes people say that I do want to surrender to Krishna, but what can I do? I have got a job to go to. I got my family behind me. And if I leave all these things and take to Krishna, what will happen? This is prarabdham. This is the thing called prarabdham. Prarabdham will not. Prarabdham manifests in the form of paradandrada. Paradandrada means that you have no freedom. You are controlled here very much by all these different entities like wife, mother, children, brother, sisters, husband and children. Like this, an enormous number of personalities around you demanding from you one thing or the other. So in other words, you are answerable to all these people in one form or the other. That is your prarabdham. The fact that you are caught up in this cycle of family attachment itself is a prarabdham. So this prarabdham is one factor that will not easily allow one to surrender to Krishna. Secondly, there are other things also. That is, the second and most another important thing is the three modes of material nature. We all know that in this material world that we all have our own modes of nature. And this modes of nature is picked up according to one's association. And even while receiving a material body, a certain degree of modes of nature is present already there. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find Brahma was discussing about the modes of nature while at the time of creation. When the human society was created, there is a very specific reference there. Rajodigaha karmabaraha dukheja sukhamanina. Srimad Bhagavatam. Rajodigaha karmabaraha. That rajogunam is the most predominating quality in the human body. So that you will find rajogunam is attacked very heavily by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita also. Rajodigaha karmabaraha. That rajogunam is very strongly in the human body. And as long as this rajogunam is there, along with that sometimes tamogunam also. So these two lower modes of nature are present in us and in a very high degree. And as far as the third one, satogunam is concerned, maybe just a drop somewhere. Just a little drop. It is not anybody's fault. Brahma has created us like that. He had got three bottles there, sitting there. And when he was mixing these three bottles, he took too few drops from the rajogunam, couple of drops from the tamogunam. And sometimes he thought, this man can have a little bit of this, a smell of it. Just, you know, like perfumes. You give perfumes in the airport and all, when you are traveling somewhere, somebody will approach you, try this perfume, they'll say. And he'll give you a little bit on your hand to smell it yourself. And similarly, Brahma has told, you can have this much satugunam with you. Rest everything is rajogunam and tamogunam. So majority of us is have this rajogunam in us. Rajodigaha karmabaraham. What does this mean? Rajogunam means rajogunam has got two aspects. What is that? Abhimanam, pride, and all the time work. Satugunam has got knowledge and prakasham, light. Enlightenment and knowledge is satugunam. Rajogunam means working hard and also pride from doing that work. That is why this whole world is running like this on the power of this rajogunam. If rajogunam was there, there would have been a lot more peace in this world. But the peace is missing. Why? Because of this rajogunam. Rajogunam will push people. I have to do this, I have to do that, I have to go there, I have to get this, I've done. If I don't do this, who will do it? And this, that and the other. This will continue going on like this. Day after day, this will happen. And this, the power of this behind it is Rajogunam. Rajodigaha. Brahma says there, karma varaha. All the time, karmam, 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 karmam. Endless it is. He'll work from morning to night. And in the evening, when he comes home, he's so tired. And then he will get his sofa set and he sits there and he says, I'm tired, but after all, this is what's life, isn't it? He will find a relief himself. Is there anywhere written life has to be like this? No. He has made his own philosophy like this. He does not know that it is the Rajogunam that is pushing him to be in that position. This whole material world is running on this principle. Rajodigaha karmavaraham. The karma varam, continuously karmam. I have karmam, doing karma one thing or the other. No time to think about anything else. Even if the death is waiting at the doorstep, he hasn't got the time to think about it. This is the beauty of this Rajogunam. So this Rajogunam is very strongly in us. And what else has got the problem with this Rajogunam? Dukkheja sukhamaninam. That always is getting in life is all distress only. It's only distress every day what he's getting. Whether it is at the workplace or whether it's at home, whether even you go to the temple, sometimes what you're getting is all distress in some form or the other. But even after getting this distress, he is thinking, it's not too bad after all. So that is that illusion of Rajogunam. Rajogunam creates this illusion. Dukkheja sukhamanina. Brahma is saying this. Brahma says, I've created them in this way. So that this material world can go on like this. Dukkheja sukhamanina. So dukham, all he is experiencing is nothing but distress throughout life in one way or the other. But every time when the distress comes, he is tolerating it and suffering with it. And at the end, he is accepting that this is not too bad. Sukhamanina. He is thinking it is sukham. This is maya. This is the way maya functions. Maya gives us these three modes of material nature. And the two lower modes of nature, Rajogunam and Tamogunam, is always giving us this feeling of happiness in this world. So these are the second problem. Apart from the Prarabdham is one, and the second thing is this Rajogunam or Tamogunam, or the three modes of nature, we'll simply put it like that. In addition to these two things, there is another third thing, what is also there, which also you can't ignore, which is known as Vasanas. Vasana means what you have brought with you from your previous lifetimes. For example, in different bodies, we have experienced different kinds of sense gratification. The result of that sense gratification is that vasanas, or in other words, the propensities that you have acquired from those activities will stay in your consciousness in the subtle body, which comes with you into the next body. That you can't avoid. In the Brahma Sutram, there is reference to that. How it works is, sometimes you wonder that you have created some good karma. For example, you performed a lot of pious activities or charities or whatever. You have done something very good in this world. And the result will be that you have acquired a lot of pious results from that. Krishna also says that in the Bhagavad Gita, you will find that you will go up. Evam muktva sagalogam vishalam. Shine punye martelogam vishandi. When that punyam is finished in the surgalogam, you have to come back to this earthly planet again. This is the rule behind it. But if the question is then, that if you have gone to the heavenly planet, and if you have finished up your karma, then where is the vasanas coming from? That question will automatically come, isn't it? But the way vasanas work is like this. That suppose you have performed karma, and in order to suffer or in order to enjoy the results of those pious activities, you have gone to the heavenly planets. Let us assume that you have performed pious activities and you have gone to the heavenly planets. It can happen the other way also. You perform sinful activities, you go to the hellish world also. It happens both ways. So after going there, once you have burned up that results, then there shouldn't be any karma. Karma is not there, but vasanas are still there. Just like if you have a pot of oil in the pot, you throw the whole oil into another bottle or pot. Still, if you look in the pot, it is still sticking there, isn't it? The oil hasn't gone away completely. It won't go. You cannot completely take out the oil from this pot. There will be still some tinge of that oily quality there in the pot still. Vasanas are like that. This nature of the vasanas is like this. It will stick to you. It won't let you escape from that. And that will come with you and will stay with you in your subtle body. As and when a right opportunity comes, it will come out. Like in the case of Ajamila, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find there. So, this kind of vasanas, what we have come with us, if they are not very good, they are not very pious propensities or good vasanas, the chances are that will stop you from surrendering to Krishna. So you can see the problems. You have got the prarabdha karma. You have got the modes of nature. You have got the vasanas again stopping you from surrendering to accepting this authority of Krishna's instructions in the Bhagavad Gita. So like this, various things are influencing our life unknowingly or knowingly. But the fact remains that the words, although spoken very simple, sarvadharma and paritejyam, in order to surrender to Krishna, it is not an easy job. So, because it is like that, this is precisely the reason why Krishna has spoken about the different yoga processes in the Bhagavad Gita. You will find there beginning with Sanghyam, then with Karmam, then with Ashtangam, and then with Rajayogam, and then eventually Bhakti Yogam, and then later on Jnana Yogam. All these things are discussed, and they are the processes or what is known as the sadhana for getting rid of all these different blocks or obstacles in our path in surrendering to Krishna. So now you can understand why all these yoga systems are important. They are the processes by which you eliminate your difficulty to surrender to Krishna. If you practice these different yoga systems for a lifetime, what will happen is, by end of your life, see sincerely if you practice it, by end of your life, you will get rid of most of these problems that has avoided you in accepting and surrendering to Krishna. Sometimes when you read the process of the surrendering in Shastram, it is called as Sharanagati. Sharanagati is the process. And the ultimate goal of all the yoga system, everything, is Sharanagati, to surrender to Krishna. That is the goal of Bhagavad Gita. If that is not attained, there is no point in studying Bhagavad Gita. So the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is Sharanagati. But in order to achieve that Sharanagati, these are the problems before us. And that will not go away unless we follow the process what Krishna has given us in the Bhagavad Gita. So what will happen is, sometimes we have some beautiful songs written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, known as Sharanagari. In that Sharanagari, so many things he has mentioned, that I offer my family to you, I offer my house to you, I offer myself to you, surrender myself to you. And so many things, in so many unfortunate conditions, Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions how the living entity should feel submissive to Krishna and surrender himself to accept Krishna's authority. But the difficulty is that our conditioned nature will not allow us to. We will read all those songs nicely. We can appreciate it also, the sentiments behind it, what Bhaktivinoda Thakur has mentioned. But as soon as we close the book and keep it, it is still again the old story. Isn't it? Just like we are saying that the dog, its tail, if you put even for 1,000 years inside a pipe to straighten it out, as soon as you take the pipe out, the tail goes back again into its old position. It is exactly the same thing, our mind. Our mind has got this one quality, that when it reads the book, and when it reads the such beautiful prayers from Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Narottam Das Thakur also, when you read the prayers, it looks wonderful. When you hear them from somebody also, it looks very wonderful. But when it comes to practice, we are helpless. Or that's only for Bhaktivinoda Thakur can do it, I can't do it. We'll say like that. That's alright for Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Narottam Das Thakur. But when it comes to us, we are not anywhere near there. And then we keep asking questions to everybody, Prabhu, how do I get there? But what can we do? This is whole load is behind us, holding us back, pulling us back every time. So these are the problems. So what Krishna is saying there is that practice this yoga system. If you practice the yoga system sincerely and with seriousness, then one day, by the process of these yoga systems, these problems which are blocking us or stopping us from surrendering to Krishna will go away. And when that goes away, we will get the samskar or the purification in us so that we can surrender to Krishna. This is how that system works. You will be able to surrender to Krishna when you are purified. And that purificatory processes is called the sadhana or these different yoga systems. Without practicing this yoga system, it is not possible to purify yourself. It is not possible. And unless you purify through sadhana by your own consciousness, you will not be able to surrender. Sadhana is not for going back to Krishna. Krishna is not checking how much sadhana you have done. Krishna is checking only this thing. Ultimately, you require Krishna's mercy. It is Krishna who take you out of the material world, not your sadhana. You have to remember that. Sadhana is only to purify yourself. The process is to purify. Somehow or the other, to purify our consciousness, get rid of all the complications inside, and come to that state of consciousness where we can surrender to Krishna. Here I am finished with this material world, please accept me. In order to say this to Krishna, it is not an easy thing. Why Srimad Bhagavatam is so highlighting this point all the time? Different personalities in the Bhagavatam you will find, how they have surrendered to Krishna. Kundi Devi gone through so much distress in life, and she followed this process of bhakti to such an extent that eventually she said to Krishna, what did she say to him? Sneha bhasha mimam chindi dridam pandu shubrishnishum. I have understood the problem now, Kundi Devi says to Krishna. Why? I was unnecessarily attached to all these people around me. I never understood my relationship with you. And because of that, my sneha vasham or the rope of attachment I had with, these are my Pandavas are my children, and all the Kauravas are my relatives, Vrishnis are my relatives, Yadavas are my relatives, this, that and the other, and all these people are somewhere or the other connected to me, I belong to this family. All these kind of complicated relationships I had. But I know now, she says to Krishna, that I have nothing to do with any of these things. It is finished. The moment you take the scissors and cut this rope, immediately all that connection is over. Sneha vashamimam chindhi dridam pandu shubrishnishum. That this very, very strong rope that is attaching me to all these, one side is the Pandavas and the other side is the Vrishnis. If you just cut this for me and I am released from this, she said to Krishna. So that stage has to come in our own life also. It will come to anyone who has taken to this process. Eventually it has to happen. The process begins sometime in life and we continue with the process, and depending on the sincerity, depending on the seriousness with which one executes the spiritual life, these different yoga systems, eventually it will come to that point of understanding that Krishna will recognize it, that this person has purified enough. And at that point, automatically you will fall in front of Krishna and ask for Krishna's shelter to take you out of this, to take us out of this material world once for all. So that is that verse is indicating it. So often we have, and once you have reached that stage of surrender, then there is no sadhana, nothing required. After all, sadhana is all finished there. Because the sadhana is meant to get to that stage to surrender. But once you have reached that stage, then there is no coming back from there. Then it is only surrender and Krishna takes care of everything after that. A devotee does not have to bother that he is not bound by anymore by the rules and regulations and other things. Because he has already reached that stage of purity where he has totally surrendered to Krishna. So this you can see from Bhagavad Gita, the ultimate goal of the Bhagavad Gita is to how to surrender to Krishna. This is the goal of Bhagavad Gita. In order to surrender to that process, because of our different restraints or restrictions what we have to purify us, and that different yoga systems are discussed in the Bhagavad Gita from beginning to end. So this is the purpose of all the yoga systems. Now, if you understand the position of Bhagavad Gita, that is another important thing. Why Bhagavad Gita is so important? Bhagavad Gita is important because you have to know a little bit about the tradition of Vedic culture. The Vedic culture, as you know, that the Vedas come from Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality who has released the Vedic knowledge to the great sages. Great sages acquired the Vedic knowledge from Krishna by their austerities and penances, and Krishna pleased to be there. Surrender, and pleased with their austerities, Krishna has revealed to them this Vedic knowledge. Vedic knowledge is generally called as Shraudam. Shraudam means Shruti. Shruti, what you hear. So, this Shruti or Shraudam, the knowledge that's come through Shrutis, is what Krishna has given to the great sages. And these great sages, their realization, this has all happened millions of years ago. This has been going on from then on. Different sages, there are many, many great personalities in that process. They have their realizations, which is known as this, they form the Vedic literature. Their realizations along with the what is known as the mantras. Mantras forms the Vedic mantras have come from these great sages. These sages are the personalities who have been given the authority or realization by Krishna. And therefore, these Vedas are considered to be the breathing of Krishna. Nishvasidam, it says there. Nishvasidam. So, Krishna's breathing is the Vedas. So, in other words, Krishna is the supreme personality behind the Vedic literature. You will notice one thing. In Srimad Bhagavatam and in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has two different roles. Krishna plays two different roles. Just like we say in the offices also, isn't it? Sometime a manager puts the hat of somebody else, isn't it? Later on, if he has to do some other work, he says, I put another hat now, he says. He goes into, say, construction work or project management or whatever it is, he does. And here, he could be doing a different job in the office, but at the site, he has to go in a different role. So sometimes, in different positions, they put on different hats and come. Exactly, you will find in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam also, Krishna has put on a different hat in the Bhagavad Gita. I'll tell you why it is like that. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find Krishna is always accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is how Krishna is. But for all the devotees, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's beauty, Krishna's knowledge, all these things are in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which inspires the devotees to get attached to Krishna in different ways. Like in many instances, you'll find in the Bhagavatam different statements in how devotees got attracted to Krishna by beauty, by knowledge, by renunciation, and different things. So, in the Bhagavatam, the role of Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, worshipped by the gopis, worshipped by the great devotees like Uddhava, and also Prahlada and so many others. That's all in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is like that. But when it comes to Bhagavad Gita, you will find Krishna's role is a little different. Why? There you will find Krishnam Vande Jagal Gurum. Krishna is the Supreme Spiritual Master there. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's position is more than anything else. Although everything Vedavyasa Maharshi has mentioned there, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, there is no doubt about that. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the role what he is playing in Bhagavad Gita is Supreme Spiritual Master. Now, why Krishna has taken both roles? Because nobody else can do that job. This is why. If no one else can do this knowledge, disseminating the transcendental knowledge like the way Krishna has done, no one else can do that. And that is why Krishna himself had to come with another hat there. So, that is why Vasudeva Sudam Devam Kamsa Chanura Mardhanam Devagi Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagal Gurum. Krishna is called as Jagal Guru, or the Supreme Spiritual Master is Krishna. And in Bhagavad Gita, that role of spiritual master is what comes forth very strongly than the way Krishna has performed pastimes in Srimad Bhagavatam. So you can see the difference. And why Krishna has to do that? Because from the Vedic point of view, knowledge means spiritual knowledge. Material knowledge is not even considered as knowledge. On the other hand, it is considered as ignorance. You can see how difficult it is. In the common world, when you talk about spiritual knowledge, most of the people are so proud of their material advancement and material knowledge. They think there is nothing else to know after that. They have attained the pinnacle of knowledge. That is how many of these big, big men in the universities and professors and all, they have come to this conclusion that through their research work, they have seen everything in this world, what is to be known. And they know the process. They know the answer. This is how they think about it. This is not unusual. Anyone who has material advancement is bound to think like that. But from Krishna's point of view, and that only you can appreciate it when you read Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is very categorically saying there that Edal jnanam iti proktam ajnanam tadananyatha. Bhagavad Gita, you will find this statement. All these talking about different spiritual side of life, Krishna is discussing the transcendental knowledge for chapter after chapter. And at the end he says there, Edal jnanam iti proktam. This is what I have spoken to you today so far is called knowledge. Ajnanam tadananyatha. Everything else is ignorance, Krishna says. In other words, the whole material knowledge is categorized under ignorance. It is nothing but ignorance because it is not answering your questions. We have many, many questions to ask. What is my true identity? Who am I? What is my origin? Where have I come from? And if you only understand the Vedic tradition, you can appreciate these things better. I'll give you an example. Once, in the Vedic times, the system was that the Brahmachari went to the spiritual master to learn the learn the transcendental knowledge. So first from 5 years he starts, 5 years and onwards, normally they are sent to the spiritual master, stays with the spiritual master with and his wife at home, and he leaves his home but goes to the spiritual master and stays with the spiritual master and his wife. The wife of the spiritual master accept these children as their own children and look after them. And the spiritual master instructs him in the transcendental, in the all the shastras. Sanskrit language is taught to him, and later on all the other necessary knowledge before they enter into the householder ashram in a brahmachari life. At that age, it is too early to start instructing on spiritual knowledge because the mind is not matured enough to understand. This I'm talking about ordinary people. Ordinary, in the Varnashram Dharma system, it was difficult for them to achieve the understand the complicated topics discussed in the Upanishads and the Brahma Sutram and all. That will be very difficult for them. So you have to wait up to a certain age. So when do you finish the studies with the spiritual master after the training at the Gurukulam? At the age of 20 or 25, even that time, somewhere around that time, as and when they felt that they had acquired sufficient knowledge to inquire about the transcendental topics, he goes to find someone with whom he wants to learn the science, transcendental knowledge of the transcendental world or the understanding of the process of liberation and freeing oneself from this world. These thoughts will come to him very strongly if one is trained up like that from the early days in life. So in one such instance, one brahmachari goes to a spiritual master. And when the spiritual master, so sometimes this age between, after once it starts around 20, 25, it's the most difficult age in life. We think it is the best age in life. Because body is in a top condition, the mind is full of arrogance and pride, and you won't accept anything unless you suffer from it, something. So this is the difficulty. At that time, the false pride is so powerful in our own mind, and the tendency to question everything. And in addition to that, that rajogunam and tamogunam is at its peak in the body. We are not aware of any of these things. We are thinking that, I'm so fortunate that I have, and we are also thinking that health will stay like this forever in life. But only when it comes to about 45, 50, one after the other, the spare parts require changing. Only then the realization comes that, I used to think that it was going to stay like this till death. But now it doesn't look like that. Then the problem starts, and then it comes how many tablets every day, morning, evening, midday, keeping the tablets in the briefcase and walking around thinking that I'm healthy enough, these tablets will support me. So you put your faith in different things to sustain yourself. But the fact is this, that at that age it is very difficult to accept an authority. But even if after training sometimes it gets very difficult. So generally in all the Vedic system, the process is when someone wants to have spiritual knowledge, he approaches the spiritual master, someone whom he has come to know and he wants to learn from him, and he goes to him in a submissive mode to inquire from him about spiritual knowledge. So one person went to a spiritual master like this. So when he went up to him, the spiritual master was very happy to welcome him because he already had the background. There are so many things referred to as background. I'll say background because there are other things related to that, which I'll talk about it later. So when he went up to him, the spiritual master asked him, "What's your name?" he said. So the disciple says to the spiritual master, "My name is Ram." We'll take for example some name. We'll take it as Ram. "I'm Ram," he said. "Huh. Nice name," he said. "You got a nice name, Ram. So how long had you this name?" he said. So Ram got a bit surprised when somebody asked you, "How long you had this name?" No one asks such a question, isn't it? If you tell someone that I'm so and so, if he asks me, "How long you had this name?" it looked very silly to ask that. But this person, Ram, says to him, to this spiritual master, why, he didn't want to upset him, so he says to him, when I was born, I was given this name," he said. "When I was gone, my parents gave me this name, so since birth I had this name." "Ah, that's very good," he said. "So after you have got your birth, you got this name," he said. He says, "Yes, before that I wasn't there," he said. So the spiritual master asked him straight away a question, "You didn't exist before that?" He says, Ram says, "I don't know whether I existed or not, but as far as the name is concerned, I know I got it when I got this body and I came to this world." So the spiritual master says to him that, do you think that you existed before you were born?" He says, by now he's getting a little bit confused. Why is he asking all these kind of questions? He says, "I do not know whether I existed or not. I may have existed," he says, "but I don't know what my name was then." "Ah, then it's good," he says. "That means that this name was given to you when you got this body, isn't it?" he says to him. Ram says, "Yes, when I got this body." "So this name, what you have got it is, actually is the name of the body, isn't it? But I am asking you what your name is." "Your name is," he said. So the disciple is thinking now, more confused about it. It is now he started realizing that all these years people are asking me, "Who are you?" "I am Ram." And all this Ram, he was identifying with himself, but actually the name Ram was only in relationship with his body. Because he got it only when he came to this world and he got this body. Now, this is how the first meeting between the spiritual master and the disciple begins. There itself, the false pride or false ego is smashed first moment. Because as long as you have this false ego and false pride, it will not allow you to understand anything in relationship with the spirit soul. This is the biggest problem. So in order to get out of this situation, everybody, no matter who it is, the normal procedure is, first thing the spiritual master has to do is to break the false ego. Smash it down. And exactly that Krishna has done in Bhagavad Gita also. You will notice that in the Bhagavad Gita you will find, what Krishna says? Ashochyananya shojastvam prajnavadamscha bhashase gadasu nagadasumscha nanushojandi panditaha. Shri Bhagavan Vaja, in the second chapter, Krishna starts this hammering Arjuna with this. First, it's a real hammering to Arjuna. Arjuna was speaking to Krishna as a learned person. "Oh, I know this, I have studied this." Actually, Arjuna knows the whole Shastram, you know. Arjuna had complete knowledge of Shastram. He was not illiterate. He was a very, very learned person. And he was talking also. But Krishna is saying to Arjuna, "Arjuna, don't talk so much," he says. "Because ashochyananya shojastvam, you have studied all these things, but nothing has gone into your head." He says, that's what he is saying in indirect way. Prajnavadamscha bhashase. Prajna has not achieved anything. Nothing has gone into the prajna. And the type of talk what you are doing, gadasuna gadasumscha nanisho jandi panditaha. A learned person never lament for one who is coming and going, who is coming and going. It's not in his view at all. So in other words, you can see here what the problem is. Arjuna has spent all his lifetime studying and listening and thinking, but the knowledge what was required wasn't there. Why? This is the question, isn't it? This question comes, why is that? We all study Bhagavad Gita, we all read it many times, upwards and downwards, backwards and forwards, you read it. And still, you are thinking, "I have not understood anything what Krishna is saying." This is the mystery of Bhagavad Gita. The reason for that, also, there are other reasons. It's not that it doesn't happen. In the olden days, before one took up the study of scripture, Shastram, particularly Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Upanishads and all that, generally, one has to prepare oneself for that to some degree. It is necessary, and therefore, different requirements are there before preparing oneself for spiritual life. And these can help to purify us and to come to some level headedness in our own mind, that we become peaceful enough to absorb the knowledge what is in the Shastra. For example, the requirements jnanis will put on is generally, they will say, jnanis side, not about the devotees. We conquer them in a different way. Problems are there for us also. It's not devotees don't have problem. Jnanis have got the problem, devotees also have the problem. But we conquer that problem in one way, they conquer it in a different way. The purpose of all this is that the jnanis will say, when the jnanis want to discuss anything related to spiritual topics, they will put the limitations like this. First of all, you have to create what is known as ability to discriminate between the self and the non-self. What is soul and what is not soul. What is nothing to do with spirit soul. Everything. Self and the non-self. Atma and anatma. That differentiation is an absolute necessity for one who follows the path of Jnana Marga. In addition to that, that means by constant analysis and reflection, one should come to the firm conclusion that everything that's been created in this material world is nothing but non-self, which is nothing to do with the spirit soul. It is only a thing what has come out from Maya. So by constantly analyzing this in one's own mind, one will come to the firm understanding that behind everything is there is a living force or the spirit soul which is actually causing all the material manifestation. And everything what you experience in this material world is nothing but the manifestation of Maya, more some material nature. So that constant analysis in this way will bring you to that point to understand that there is a living spiritual force behind it, which is the soul or spiritual energy. Then, in addition to that, they will also mention that you have to cultivate certain qualities in oneself. They call it as the that shamam, damam. These qualities are mentioned in Bhagavad Gita also. Krishna, when he talks about Jnana Yogam, these things will come later. Shamam, damam, tiricha, uparadi, shraddha, samadhanam. 6 things are mentioned there. They'll generally call it as shamadamari shal sambati. What it means is that shamam means complete control of the senses. You can see where the problem is. Our problem is very simple. Our problem is that all these requirements are not there in us. Shamam is complete control of the senses. That means you have the complete control, not allow the senses to go in any direction. It will stay where if you ask him to stay. That's kind of control on the senses. That is called shamam. Then the second thing is dhamam. Dhamam means control of the mind. To control the mind to such an extent that under no circumstances the senses will drive the mind. Because generally that is our normal position in this world. If senses tells us that something is very good to enjoy, the mind say, okay, let's go and have it. We'll go and enjoy that. This is the nature of the mind, isn't it? So shamam is control of the senses, dhamam is control of the mind. And the third thing is referred to as titiksha. Titiksha, you know what it means. Titiksha means to tolerate everything. One who comes to spiritual life, this is the prime qualification, to tolerate everything. People will spit at you, people will yell at you, people will do everything in this world. Adhyatmiyam, Adhibhaudhiyam, Adhidevyam, all three different kinds of problems will come from all directions. And in spite of all these pressures coming from every angle, one should learn to tolerate them. This is called tiriksha. And it is a very, very difficult thing. And normally, one who has got shamam and damam, that means control of senses and control of mind, normal situation, he will have good tiriksha also. It is not very difficult then. Because these are the two things which is giving you trouble all the time, the senses and the mind. If they have come under control, tiriksha will be there naturally, to able to tolerate other things. I think in the 13th chapter, Krishna discusses these things one after the other. Abhaya sattva samshuddhir jnana yoga vivastati dhanandamascha yogascha swadhyaya sava arjavam. There are so many qualities one after the other mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. So there you will find these qualities also, shamam, damam, titiksha. Then after that, what is known as uparadhi. Uparadhi means that after you have come through these three, shamam, damam and titiksha, one has to achieve what is known as uparadhi. Uparadhi means to come to the realization of the nature of the spiritual reality behind everything and to be fully attached to it. That means you have come to the steady mind. That mind is so fixed up now that you are able to say that you will not allow the mind to go away in any other unnecessary things. Unnecessary things means everything in the material world is unnecessary. At the end, there is nothing in this material world so important. We classify this is important, that's important, because we have to eat, we have to sleep, we need money, so all these kind of things have come from. But in the olden days, when people looked for spiritual life, eating and sleeping were not the priority. They had that strength in them to inquire for the truth in this way. So they did not give any importance to any of these things. They were not at all a consideration. It is only in Kali Yuga that these things have become topmost important. How to run FTSE index is going up every day, up or down. Accordingly, my life, happiness and distress also will go up and down. This is the Kali Yuga great society has offered to us. If the index is going up, you are happy. If the index is going down, you are miserable. So what can you do? This is the Kali Yuga quality. In the Satyugam and Tridayugam and even in Dwamarayugam, people did not care about these things to that extent. They were able to maintain a lifestyle so simple that they were able to not to care about a concern for about eating, sleeping, mating and defending. These were not the problems of a person who wanted to advance on the spiritual path. Therefore, uparadhi comes there for such a person who wants to advance spiritually. He has to have that seriousness in his mind. Should not become any botheration. Any of these things in this world should not bother him at all, because they have no significance as far as spiritual realization is concerned. That firmness in the mind is called uparadhi. So you can see step by step how things go. And then after uparadhi, what is known as shraddha. Shraddha means that adiva vishwasa. That means complete faith in the shastram. What shastra says, what Krishna says, absolute faith in that. No deviation, no question of mistrusting or not accepting the authority of shastra. It is the sad thing in the Kali Yuga is that you have to convince everything, everybody first, before he can accept it. This convincing was not a business in the old Vedic tradition. Convincing doesn't arise at all. The question doesn't arise of convincing. Because shastram is shastram at any time. It is you who are fallen behind. And you can't blame the shastra for that. That you have grown so weak in your mind, you have lost your faith in the spiritual side of life, you have completely fallen down under the control of the senses and the mind, and now in this fallen condition, you are trying to check it out whether the shastras are right or not. This is our position. Shastram is not like that. Shastram does not need any checking from our side. It's already checked out by the proper people, and they have already given us the conclusions also. So those who have following this path, this shraddha is an important thing. Shraddha means, it says there, shraddha means adiva vishwasa. Adiva vishwasa means excellent faith in the shastram. No deviation or no question of doubting anything what shastra says. Adiva vishwasam. And then after shraddha comes what is known as samadhanam. Samadhanam means that your mind is not wavering anymore. And it is so serious, fully focused in the spiritual side of life. Nothing else. Material activities all finished, gone, once for all from life. Unless and until one comes to this point, these are the minimum requirements what was demanded from a person who went to the spiritual master to learn about spiritual knowledge. This was the system for the jnanis. Now, if it is like that, you may ask the question to me, are we wasting our time here? This is natural, isn't it? Because if it is all so difficult, everything is so difficult, then what's the point? I think I will rather as well go and enjoy myself. And I don't have the strength to do any of these things if it is so complicated. It is not. It is not like that. Because Krishna knows our problems. You see, Krishna knows where we stand. We don't know where Krishna stands, but Krishna knows where we stand. That much is clear. Because if you see in the Shastram, all these things are spoken very detailed. In our body, the material body has a different nature. For example, in the Satyugam, it is called Astigata Pranam. Astigata Pranam means they could perform such austerities and penances right up to the point that only the bones were left in the body. Can you imagine that? You will see the life of Hiranyakashipu's penances, how it was. And there were others also, Chavana Maharshi in the 9th canto. And then there are so many others like that. They will perform such austerities and penances till it was only the bone was left. There was no flesh, there was no blood, there was nothing in the body except the bones. They will sit like this. And all around this earthworms will build their nest. And when Brahma came, he has to throw the water from his Kamandali water pot. And then the earth pot broke up and from inside came out our Hiranyakashipu in beautiful form from inside. So that is what is known as Astigata Pranam. Astigata Pranam means a long lifespan in the Satyugam, tremendous mental strength to perform austerities and penances, and great capacity to tolerate all the difficulties of the material world. This was their qualities. As much as the time advanced, when it came to the time of the Tridayugam, the second yuga, people have become less intelligent and less, they had less capacity to tolerate this material, to tolerate these inconveniences. In other words, they lost the strength a little bit, and therefore they are called as Mamsagata Pranam. Astigata Pranam was the first one. Now they are called Mamsagata Pranam. Mamsagata Pranam means they could not go up to the level of the bones, but right up to the flesh they could go. In other words, even if there was no food, they were able to perform penances. Through yoga practices and all were very easy for them. They trained up themselves. Long lifespan, a serious, genuine interest in practicing spiritual life. With all that, they were able to execute that. And they were called Mamsagata Pranam. Mamsagata Pranam means up to that point they could tolerate. When it comes to Dwapara Yugam, it is further deteriorated and the result was they were called Rudhiragata Pranam. Rudhiragata Pranam means they had the blood point, they need the blood to flow and only then they could perform their austerities and penances. So you can see first the bones and then the flesh and now the blood in the Dwapara Yugam. But when it came to Kali Yugam, the whole scene changed further. Kaliyugam is called Annagata Pranam. Annagata Pranam means unless food goes inside, you can't do anything in this world. This is Kaliyugam. Kaliyugam. So first thing we have to remember that material body also is not the best what we have in that sense. It is one of the, you can say, it is not the best vehicle to utilize for spiritual life. You can see the whole thing, how truthful all this is thing. First of all, take for example, lifetime, we say 100 years in Kali Yuga. But who lives up to 100 years first of all? You can see majority is finishing by 50 itself. 50, if you get any year after that, it is a bonus, you can take it. Nothing more than that. But every year after that, you are pushing further and further. But with a lot of maintenance, this car will run after 50 for some more time. And then you can't read any book after that because once you start opening the book, immediately you'll fall asleep. And then you put the light off, finish the whole day is over now, let me sleep. So you go to sleep. So this is Kali Yugam, this is the Annagata Pranam. Annagata Pranam is like this. This is not a body which is particularly very enthusing for spiritual life. This particular body is not very enthusing for spiritual life. Now, by the time we come to some senses about spiritual life, possibly it can happen when you are 20, 25, when you become youthful. When the childhood was all spent in playing and enjoying life. At that time, total ignorance. No one told anything about spiritual life. So he just carried on playing and enjoying life. Somehow or the other, by Krishna's grace and the devotee's grace, we have come to understand there is a thing called spiritual life. Up to that point, even we didn't know there was a thing called spiritual life. We are thinking this is all. We are such people. Everything what we see with the eyes is the only truth. Everything else is wrong. That is our position. This is our ignorance. That everything what we see, like the scientists say, seeing is believing, I believe. Only if you see, you believe it. What an ignorance. What an ignorant statement. Vedas are saying everything what you see is false. Everything what you see is false. It has no reality. Because Maya, in the process of creation, has created all these things, and one day it will all wind up and take it away. And you are studying this Maya material energy so seriously, thinking that everything is so serious, what is going on here, and accepting this as the reality. This is our foolishness. So Shastra is saying that seeing is believing is not the right statement. What you hear from the Vedas, that is believing. For example, I'll give you so many problems here. According to the modern science, you cannot mix water and fire together, isn't it? Water and fire, if you mix, how will it work? It will not work. But Vedas are saying water has come from fire. Just see the difficulty. Vedas are telling us water has come from fire. It is there in the Vedic statement that in the Rigveda, all this is explained, how water has come from fire. And different material elements, one comes from the another. Whereas here, science is saying that this cannot mix together. So there also disagreement. In every level there is disagreement. And now we are saying that, oh, Shastras must be wrong because I am seeing everything correctly here. I have tested in my laboratory, so this should be the right one. That is wrong. So you have accepted your senses, your mind, your intelligence as the authority, on strength of which you have concluded that what you see with your naked eyes is the only truth. To such people, there is no point in talking about spiritual life and spiritual reality. They cannot, their mind cannot go further than that. And when one is gone through that system of education and continuously practice that in one's life, everything looks a little bit suspicious. And that is why Bhagavad Gita will remain as a suspicious thing, or mystery. Bhagavadam will remain as a mystery. Everything will remain as a mystery. But for the great sages, they had no difficulty. They had no problem because they have realized it. So they don't need also any seeing is believing anymore required there. They have already realized it. What is the truth? That is why they were able to leave behind this great literature for us. So, anyway, coming back to the Vedic conclusions, that because we have normally what Krishna has given us this is two things, knowledge and capacity to work, isn't it? Knowledge and action. This is two things what we have in this body. You got a mind, you got an intelligence, you got the senses. So, five senses. The five knowledge senses of knowledge, that means you know the two eyes, the two ears, the nose, the mouth, and the sense of touch. So they are called the senses of knowledge. And then there is senses of action in the body. But senses of knowledge is that through which you acquiring the knowledge throughout in your vacant state. I mentioned this before, that normally we have three states of existence, isn't it? Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti. There is only three states, there is no other state. That in our lifetime in this world, we stay in the Jagrat condition. Most of the daytime we are awake. So that is a Jagrat state. When you want to leave the Jagrat state, you go into, or the vacant state, you go into the dream state. When you go to bed, you go to dreams. And as soon as you go into dreams, after a while, if you are lucky enough or fortunate enough, you go into what is known as deep sleep or known as Sushupti. So you'll go into Sushupti state. And as soon as you finish Sushupti or deep sleep, you wake up in the morning, come back again back into Jagratam or to vacant state. So these three states of existence are there. In the Srimad Bhagavatam you will find, Krishna mentions this, Jagrat Sapna Sushuptim Ja Pravurto Ogunavurtaya. These are the three states in which Jiva, Tasam Vilakshano Jiva, that Jiva's possession is within these three states, he says there, like that in the Bhagavatam. So these three states you are messing around up and down all the time, falling one way or the other, up sometimes, down sometimes. So in these three states you are going through, and when the spirit soul is passing through these three states of existence, it's experiencing different things. In the Jagrat states, what's happening is your senses are active. All your senses are active. You are acquiring knowledge through your eyes, through your ears, through your sense of touch, everything. You are acquiring the knowledge, isn't it? Particularly the ears and the eyes. That's what they do. You are acquiring the knowledge all the time. And then, what else is there? After that, you have got what is known as the mind. As soon as you go into the dream state or the sopna state, dream state, what's happening is the senses have stopped their function now. That finishes with the Jagrat state. But as soon as you go into sopnam or the dream state, what happens is immediately you acquire immediately the mind comes into action. Or the mind is, that is what is predominating at that time. The senses are not working, the intelligence is also not working. This is all your own experience, there is nothing new in these things. But the mind is active. And when you come back, you go into Sushupti state, generally there is no activity for the mind or the senses, not even the intelligence. But categorically you can say that these three things, mind, intelligence and the senses, are the three things with which you are acquiring the knowledge and analyzing it. For example, the knowledge that has come through the senses, the mind analyzes it, accepting and rejecting. That goes on with the mind. And intelligence uses it for thinking. What the mind is fed into the intelligence, intelligence thinks about it and makes certain decisions, which way to go or what is the right thing to do. So you can see intelligence, mind and the senses. These are the three things what Krishna has given to us to function in this world, in this body. This is all what you have. You haven't got anything else. Now, the problem is the soul is above all this. The soul you cannot bring down into these three things. This is the difficulty. And because it is like that, as soon as you start taking Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and start reading it, although you read and understand everything, nothing is coming into your own consciousness. Why? Because the spirit soul, by virtue of its true nature, it controls all these things. It is not under its control. In other words, Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti, and five material elements, or that is known as Shabdam, Sparsham, Rupam, Rasam and Gandham. These are the five qualities of the five material elements in our the five senses. Senses of knowledge have got these five things. Shabdam is sound, Sparsham is touch, Rupam is form, Rasam is taste and Gandham is smell. So these five things, what our body is used to functioning, cannot understand the spirit soul. Cannot understand how the soul functions, how the knowledge related to soul, because Bhagavad Gita is the knowledge in relationship with the soul. So in order to understand the knowledge in relationship with the soul, senses are not capable of doing that. The soul senses, particularly when the senses are under the control of the lower modes of material nature, they will not be able to understand. So that is the reason why even after reading Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and any other Upanishads and everything, even after reading and thinking about it all, no change is happening. Nothing has happened to me. I feel all the time like that, isn't it? I'm not realizing anything. All these things I am reading, morning after morning, day after day, I'm reading Bhagavad Gita. Dehi nosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yavanam jana tatha dehandra pratyar dhirastatranam uhyadi. Very nice words in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is saying to Arjuna, my dear Arjuna, one does not lament about neither for the living nor for the dead, nor is not this material body. You have been changing your body. All these things you are reading, but when it comes to your own realization, no realization is coming. As the moment the needle touches the body, immediately, oh, I'm concerned about my pain. Or if there is no prasadam at the right time, dhira statrana muhyadi, dhira is very much muhyadi, very concerned about the prasadam at that time. Which shows that I just wonder sometimes, how long we have to carry on studying Bhagavad Gita in this way? When will that realization come to me? This is the question we are asking, isn't it? We are all asking this question. Everybody, I'm sure every devotee has this question. I've read Bhagavad Gita so many times. I've chanted these verses so nicely so many months. But still, I'm not getting any realization of this. When is it going to come? When is it going to happen? So when this question comes, everything becomes very difficult. And that is the point one starts wondering, is this all correct what is mentioned in the book? They start questioning then. Then he starts checking out with others also. Sometimes you go on repeating the same thing throughout life. But at the end, you are realizing why is it like this? Why didn't I realize anything what was spoken there? So, because it is, the nature is, difficulty is that the transcendental knowledge is a transcendental thing. That means it's beyond the senses, beyond mind, beyond intelligence. Intelligence, mind and senses cannot help you to achieve this knowledge of the self. Self-knowledge of the self is beyond the understanding of the mind, beyond the understanding of the intelligence and senses. And therefore, it is attained through realizations. And that means that is why in the older system, process was, I'm all talking about this from the beginning, how the times, time immemorial, how spiritual life carried on in the Vedic tradition. that the disciple spend the time with the spiritual master. And spiritual master had the capacity to transmit that message unto him by his realization. Only due to his realizations he was able to do that. That is why in Bhagavad Gita also Krishna will mention this specifically. Upadekshanti dekhyanam jnaninas tattva darshinah. That tattva darshanam is important. That unless you have realized that tattvam, tattva darshanam is necessary. Without tattva darshanam, how can you transmit that message to somebody else? And that was the process of spending the time with the spiritual master and the disciple. So this was a long-term process. And there were such great spiritual masters who, by virtue of their association with the disciple, were able to explain to them that they are not this body. Not only that, they were able to make them experience also that they were not the body. There were such personalities in the olden times that existed. So you can see there that spiritual life is a very valuable thing. It is not a very easy thing to think that it is a cheap thing. No, it is not a cheap thing. It is a much more expensive thing. It require lifelong commitment, require lifelong a serious attempt to realize it. Because the results are also such that there is no more life after, no more birth again after leaving this body. So, if you go to a personality who save you, not from one death, many deaths, that means normal situation, what happens to us? We leave this body, we accept another body. We leave that body, we accept another body. This is a cycle of birth and death. And we feel so grateful to someone who has protected you once in this life, isn't it? You feel so grateful to him. If someone protects you or saves you from death in this life, say a great doctor, he performed such a wonderful operation on you or given you some treatment by which he saved you from death, you feel grateful to him, eternally indebted to him for the service what he has done to you, isn't it? So if you feel so much obliged or so obliged to or grateful to a doctor who saved you in one lifetime, how much grateful you have to be to the spiritual master who has saved you from many, many deaths forever, once for all from dying in this world. So that is the importance of this spiritual master. So that was the tradition before. Now, coming back, because we haven't got so much time to go on, it's 25 past 9. So, in strictly speaking, what happens is that when he came to Kaliyugam, Krishna knew all these things. So what Krishna did was that Krishna says that this great knowledge in the Upanishads, in the Vedas generally, there are four branches. Branches means starting with mantras. For the brahmachari, brahmanas for the householder, aranyakam for the vanaprasthas, and Upanishads for the sannyasis. Mantra, brahmanam, aranyakam, Upanishads. That is how the knowledge is divided. Totally, there are 1133 Vedic hymns existing. In other words, they are called as recensions. Recensions as they are called. 1133 recensions were there when Vedavyas took up Vedas and started dividing them. Because up to that point, till Vedavyasa Maharshi took it up, Vedic system continued by hearing. One person taught the disciple, he learned from him, and the next person that in the parampara, it came through like that. But as soon as Kali Yuga came, Vedavyasa Maharshi realized it's not going to last very long, and that's what has happened. Vedavyasa Maharshi decided, I will divide it into now four of my major disciples, Pailan, Jayamini, Vaishambayanan and Sumandu, and handed over to them these 1133 recensions to them, divided them and given it to them and told them, you learn each one of them. Paila was asked to learn Rigvedam and Jayamini was asked to learn Samavedam and Sumandu was asked to learn Atharvavedam and Vaishambayana Maharshi was asked to learn Yajurvedam. So these four Vedas were given to these four disciples and told them to continue the parampara. It carried on for the last 5,000 years. And now, after all this advancement in the Kali Yuga, out of this 1,133 recensions, what is left behind now in today in India is only 9 out of 1133. In other words, out of the 1,000 Samaveda recensions, we have lost 997. Parampara has gone, completely broken and lost. And 3 are left still. It is being trained and practiced. You may think why it cannot be recorded in the tape machine or kept something like that. You may ask that question. No, it is not possible. Why? Because all the Vedic mantras are to be chanted by the qualified people who knows about it. And that is to be chanted and it will be strained to the next person in the same way. Otherwise, it is not possible to maintain that. That purity of that mantra as well as the process of chanting it also. So anyway, what is left behind is now 8 or 9. And out of 1133, 1000 of them belongs to Samavedam. 101 of them belong to Yajurvedam. And I think 21 of them belongs to Rigvedam. And the remaining 11 or 12 belongs to the Atharvana Vedam. That is how it is divided. And out of all these things, 1133, what is left behind is only 9. 8 or 9 left behind. And they are struggling hard to keep that tradition still going. Because everybody is busy in material advancement. And everyone is so concerned about the mobile phones, 3G or 4G or whatever G is the next one. These are the most important factors in life today. And we think we have made such great advancement, throwing everything else into the bin. And we have taken to the point that this modern science is the answer to all the problems. If only they knew that what the Vedic tradition has offered in its lifelong period of service to the humanity. But whatever it is, Upanishads forms the topmost part of the Vedic literature. And in that Upanishads knowledge, Krishna knew that is the science of the, which was spoken by Krishna himself has revealed that knowledge. So Krishna knows that Upanishads, the message of the Upanishads. And this Bhagavad Gita is the most classical literature which Krishna has taken out the knowledge from the Upanishads and put it together. Because in Kali Yuga, Krishna knew that the people will find it difficult to study the Upanishads, and even the parampara will also break up, and people will be less interested in the process of spiritual life, and therefore Krishna decided to give this Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, left it in this world for the benefit of the human society. That is how Bhagavad Gita has come into this world, and knowing also very well that in the age of Kali, the people will not be interested in spiritual life. They'll be simply interested in these four activities: eating, sleeping, sex life, and defense. Ahara nidra bhayamaidunancha samanya medal pashuvil naranam. Sages knew this millions of years ago that the people in the Kali Yuga, they'll be more like animals, very close to them, not much different than them. Dharmohi teja adhijam vishesham. It says there, if you understand some dharmam in Kali Yuga, you'll be considered to be very fortunate, because that's all you are capable of. It says like that. Yeah. So it says there that now, let us look at this way: eating, sleeping, sex life, and defensing. The mind has got two problems. It is explained in the Bhagavad Gita also. What are they? That's called the deluding potency and covering potency. Covering potency is called avaranam, and deluding potency is called vikshevam. So avaranam and vikshevam are the two things of the mind which will not allow you to understand the transcendental knowledge. So you can see everything is a block in your way on speech understanding. That is the reason when you read Bhagavad Gita again and again and again, nothing is clicking in there. Nothing is clicking there, because this is always stopping you, the nature of the mind, nature of the intelligence, nature of the senses, everything. Out of this, the sleeping and mating is considered to be the avaranam. And eating and defending is considered to be vikshevam. There is reasons for that also. We haven't got so much time to discuss. But in principle, if you understand this much, that is sufficient. That avaranam and vikshevam, deluding and covering potency of the mind, are the two things which is actually stopping us from understanding the spiritual side of life. Because of all these problems in this way, and because the process is very tough in the normal way to follow through Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, when it came to Kali Yuga, Krishna says, keep all that separately away from you. And chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So immediately Krishna said, here is Srimad Bhagavatam, take to it. This Bhagavatam will tell you that if you want to come back to me, we know very well, Krishna is saying, I know very well that you people don't have the capacity to study anything. nor the capacity or the strength in your mind to understand anything. As soon as I tell you some austerity, you will say, oh, that's difficult, you will say. This is how type of people you are. He says to us like that. And Brahma, on our behalf, had to go and speak to Krishna about it. And Krishna eventually agreed that Srimad Bhagavatam, let them follow Srimad Bhagavatam. After all, Bhagavatam is all about me. Let them learn Srimad Bhagavatam. Let them study Bhagavatam and they'll understand something from that. If they didn't understand anything, let them simply hear Bhagavatam. I will sit inside the Bhagavatam. Let them hear Bhagavatam and they can come back to me. And that process, Krishna has given the approval for some time in the age of Kali. Mahaprabhu came here. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came here, this was the message behind. Do you think Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, did he know what was the spiritual process? He knew everything. But he kept the whole thing behind. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, such a learned, intelligent personality, Krishna himself comes here and he is telling us, don't study all this Vedic literature, throw it away. Simply chant Hare Krishna, he says here. Why? Because the doctor knew what the situation with the patient is. So he knew the patient's situation. So he said to us, if you simply chant the holy name, Krishna's holy name all the time, as much as one can, throughout 24 hours if possible, automatically you will become qualified to go back to Krishna. This is the beauty of Kali Yuga. And therefore, because the process is so simple, and it is such a wonderful process, many, many personalities who did not make it in Kritayugam, Traidayugam and Dwabarayugam, they want to take birth in Kaliyugam. Because when you get an easy question paper, everyone wants to write the test. You know, sometimes when you go for some examinations, you see it and you find hopeless it is. You can't get through this. When it comes, suddenly somebody tells you that, if the question paper leaks out, you get sick and you have found out what the answer is, you knew everything. You want to be in the first in the examination hall. You are ready there to write the exam, and that is Kali Yuga. So Kali Yuga is that time where you have the opportunity to write this simplest test whereby one can go back. And it is purely out of Krishna's mercy. Nothing else. There is no. We haven't got any qualification to become spiritually strong. We haven't got anything in us. Neither mentally, nor spiritually, nor intellectually, nor physically, nothing. In every level, we are total failure. And completely realizing this, Krishna is telling us that all you have to do, simply chant my name. That's enough. If you chant this and purify yourself, follow the principles, study Srimad Bhagavatam, try to understand me, I will take you back. This is Krishna's guarantee. And that is why this process of chanting the holy name and process of following the advancement in Krishna consciousness is everything dependent on this one thing, that is the chanting the holy names of Krishna. Mahaprabhu knew that in this age of Kali, there is no point in saying to them that, oh, you all become very qualified after studying Vedanta Sutram and everything, and then you follow everything. We can't even maintain our purity physically, what to talk about mentally. Even physically we are impure. We have to do so many things in this world in completely impure conditions. And we are talking about chanting Vedic mantras and Gayatri and this, that and the other. Where is the question doesn't arise at all? Even if we can chant these holy names of Krishna, because these names have got the potency Krishna has put into them. Namna Amagari Bahuda Nija Sarva Shakti. That is why that verse has come in the Shikshashtakam. Why that verse is spoken? Because Sarva Shakti Tatra Arpida. Nayamena kalaha. Edadrisham tavakrabha bhagavan mamavi durdeiva medrishamivana binanuragaha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying this. Why is he saying like that? Because namna amagari bahuda nija sarva shakti tatarpida niyamida smaranena kala. That the whole potency of the holy name, Krishna has pushed everything into it. He said to us, I've given you the holy name, just chant Hare Krishna, nothing else is required. So this is the beauty of Kali Yuga. But even in spite of all these things, because Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are transcendental literature, and with Krishna's mercy, with the spiritual master's mercy, one will be able to understand the importance of this great spiritual literature. And even if we get a few drops from that, one should be considered fortunate. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.